You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, everyone. I'm Olivia.
And I'm Fiona.
On our podcast, we challenge Aunt Karen's age-old question.
What's your backup plan?
We don't have one.
Nope. Sorry, Karen.
Because you don't need a backup plan to be an artist.
Greetings,
hello,
backup planners.
The greetings, what? How? Welcome to backup.
Planet backup plans.
Plan your backup. Let's try that again.
Plan your backup.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We're back.
We are. Greetings
October.
And salutations.
When you listen to this, it'll be October, which is the best month of the year, if you ask me.
Spoopy season. Let's
go. Spoopy season. We'll keep this short because our guest is awesome. Yes. And Liv, do you want to talk about who's on the podcast this week?
Absolutely. Well, we have one of our dear friends, Wesley Capiello, a Montclair State alumni, with us this week. He has been in multiple productions of A Chorus Line. He is a dancer, singer, actor, and writer. He is brilliant, funny, insightful. I mean, all the wonderful things you can imagine about a person that you will understand when you start listening to this episode. So,
and he's my great great grand little.
Yes,
if you ever wanted
is.
To feel old, have a great great grand little in your program.
It'll be great.
It'll be great. Enjoy this episode.
Bye.
Fab. All right. Well, welcome. Welcome, Wesley.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Very excited to have you on today.
It's 9 o'clock at night for our listeners, so we were all just talking about our end of the day faces.
Mm-hmm. We're all in pajamas right now, in case anyone was wondering.
Very moisturized, too.
Yep,
we're
correct.
Doing well.
Chewy, filled with dinner. Wesley, where in the world are you right now?
So right now, I am in just outside of Princeton, New Jersey, in Hamilton, New Jersey. That's where I was born and raised. Currently living with family during this coronavirus pandemic. And it's, you know, I feel really inspired right now because I live right beside a lake. And it just, you know, the view kind of helps me stay, like, grounded. And, you know, through all this chaos, I can just look out and see, like, the serene body of water and always remember that, like, things are okay and the earth is still here and I'm still here. Mm-hmm. There are real worries in the world, not just about, like, my future and, you know, what's happening.
When will I dance again? Yeah,
right,
when,
you know,
right.
Other things to worry about.
That's going around and it's like the world on fire.
Yes, and like, they're like, who wants
does
to
anyone
see my
need
Zoom?
Does anyone need artists? I feel like that.
Yes, oh my God, it's so
exactly
good.
How it is right now. Wesley, we know all about your theater experience, but can you tell our listeners about your upbringing and how you got started in theater?
Sure. So actually, I started theater at a very young age. I started taking acting classes when I was 6 years old. So my mom tells me, I don't really remember it, but my mom tells me that when I was young, I used to watch the Annie DVD. Or I guess at that time
Wait,
it was a VHS.
One,
the 1999 with Kristen Chenoweth and Kathy Bates. The
yes.
good one. The only one that matters.
Yeah. This is going to get, we're going to get hate mail for that though, you know.
Sorry, I stand by it. I support that one. Anyway, so she tells me that I used to like rewind and learn all of the dances and like the songs and the scenes, and I would like full out perform it for her and anybody that would come to the house. And apparently one day, you know, this is all hearsay, maybe it's not true, but I'd like to think it is. Apparently one day I found an acting class and I was like, Mom, I really want to start taking these lessons. And, you know, the rest is history after that. I've just been performing ever since.
Oh, I love that.
That's it.
Did you know that you wanted to go to college for it? Or was it just something that you were doing throughout, like, growing up into high school?
I think just my whole life, it's just been something that, you know, was in my destiny. It's just always been my path. I never saw myself doing anything else. I always assumed, like, this is what I would do. And I'm thankful and grateful to be doing it. Yeah. Or, well, to have been doing it and to hopefully be doing it in the future.
Sometime before 2032.
Right. Before I'm 96, I would like to do it again.
You've already aged out of Annie. Let's not age out of anything else.
Right. Seriously.
So we all met at Montclair State.
Yes.
Can you talk to us a little bit? I think you were 2 or 3 years behind us.
I was 3 years. I was a freshman when you guys were seniors. So what is that, three
no.
years?
No. Oh,
years.
My God. It doesn't feel like that long.
Yeah,
ago.
Come on. I'm your great-grand-little. Or great-great-grand-little.
My great-great.
Great-great.
So, I mean, I know that the program changed while we were there. Like, what was your experience like getting your BFA?
My experience was actually really interesting. I feel like I met so many cool and talented directors and staff and other students that really informed how I dissect scripts and how I go into my performing process and how I approach scene work. You know, I feel like everybody I met at Montclair helped shape who I am today and how I approach my work. And, you know, without it, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I also feel really grateful to have been in most of the big dance-heavy shows at Montclair. I was fortunate enough to be cast in most dance tracks at school when I was there. I think I did, like, 8 productions in a matter of, like, 6 or 7 semesters.
God.
So that
wild.
Was... It was wild, but also incredible, and I didn't want to be doing anything else, so I'm very thankful for it.
Yeah.
You know, Montclair, it definitely had its ups and downs. There were really low lows, but I'm sure we've all faced those in our time. Times when I thought maybe this wasn't for me and, you know, I wasn't talented enough to pursue this professionally. But you just have to keep trucking through. And, you know, nobody else is going to believe in you more than yourself. So you really have to just believe that you're going to succeed and that you have what it takes and that your drive will get you where you need to be. And I think that Montclair definitely taught me how to be my biggest fan and how to support myself even when it felt like nobody around me was supporting me.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Love that.
For
sure.
Does make
well,
sense.
And then, I mean, you graduate and then you truly, like, no one's holding you accountable to show up to dance class or voice lessons or auditions. Like, that's huge.
Right. It's all on you. You don't have to go to any audition you don't want to go to. So it's really a self-driven career.
Yeah.
You started auditioning while you were in school, right?
I went on a few auditions in school. I didn't really do... I didn't want to do anything that would take me out of school because I knew if I left, I wouldn't come back. So I auditioned for a lot of summer stocks when I was in school, but mostly it was only stuff that I knew that I would be really right for or felt like I could do and still finish my education at the same time. But definitely, like, that first year out of college, it was such a shock to be auditioning without the sort of structure of school behind you. You know, when you're in school, you, like, go audition, you don't get the job, you come back to school, and you, like, learn
and
better yourself.
Right, and you get to sing the next morning and take class. Yeah, for sure.
And it's like, oh, whatever, I didn't get it, but I'm still here doing what I love. So then, you know, when you're auditioning out of school and you don't necessarily get the job, you, like, go back to your life as a server, and you're like, this is asinine, I wish that I were performing right now.
This is terrible!
I hate this, but yeah, you know, it's all par for the course, though. That's what this career is, highs and lows, and the highs definitely outweigh the lows.
Absolutely, and your senior year, actually, you did do a couple of auditions, and it actually booked you the Chorus Line National and International Tour. So
this is true.
Yeah.
That we did our research.
We do our research. It's cool.
You guys stalked me.
How did that come about? What happened?
So it was sort of... So A Chorus Line has been my favorite show for as long as I can remember. I was fortunate enough to do it 3 times before that. So I just felt like I needed to be on that tour. And I was doing a summer stock production that summer. And I saw that they had cast some roles on the upcoming tour. And I was like, no, like, I missed the audition. Like, I'm not in the city right now. I need to be on that show. I need to be a part of it. Like, I knew Bjork Lee was involved. And, you know, if anybody's watched Every Little Step, plug. If anybody's watched Every Little Step, like, it's just, like, pretty much the entire team that was working on that production, aside from Bob Avian, was involved with the tour. And I knew, like, that was ultimately a dream of mine to work with her on that show and to learn it from her. Because I had done it at community theaters or in summer stock. And it's not the same as learning it from somebody who was actually there when they were putting the show together, who knows what every move means, who knows what every line is coming from, you know? So I was in summer stock doing the show. And I was like, I need to audition for this. So I got back to school and I saw a casting call for like a few swings and some like random roles that I guess they had yet to fill. And I skipped class one day. I was like, screw this. I'm going to go try out, because I wasn't cast my senior year in anything. So I was like, F you to Montclair. I'm going to go try out for this. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror that morning and saying, I am not coming back to my room until I get this job. And that is the first and last time I've ever said that about an audition. But I did. I went in that day and I had callbacks for like the next 4 days in a row. And then I was doing some press stuff and I still didn't know if I had gotten it. But everybody I was working with on the press stuff had found out that they had gotten it.
Oh, I remember hearing about that.
Yes, it was so wild. It was such a surreal experience because I was... You know, we were doing some, like, promo stuff, so we were doing some choreography from the show, and we were, like, rehearsing with Bjork, quote-unquote, like, staged rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being in a room full of people who knew that they had the job, who had been cast months prior to this.
Jesus.
And being, like, the only person who didn't know. And I forget who it was, but somebody on the way out was like, see you soon.
Oh.
And I just remember being like, oh my God, like, what does that mean? Does that mean that I got it? And then I found out the next week that I had gotten it. And thankfully, it really worked out with my schedule because our rehearsal process started at the end of my first semester of senior year. It didn't overlap with school at all, really. So I got to finish my first semester of senior year and then applied the tour as the rest of the credits that I had to fulfill, and I was able to graduate in 3.5 years instead.
Yeah.
So that was nice. And I got the job, and it was my first swing job, which was so scary. But I'm sure we'll get into that.
Like that too.
I know.
That's crazy.
But God. Let me tell you something. I had been preparing, I didn't know at the time, but I had been preparing to be a swing on that show since I fell in love with that show. I had studied that show. I had studied each role, each character, each step, each formation more than and maybe anyone else should ever study that show, because I was so obsessed. And one of the productions I did in high school at a community theater, they gave us a bootleg of the Broadway production, the latest revival, the 2006 one. And I just remember, like, even long after the show had ended, my production that I was in, I just watched it over and over. I was just so obsessed. And I was like, I need to do this. And I need to do it like this, in a space like this, taught by Bjork Lee. Like, I need to do this. So I was actually way more prepared than I thought I was, which was nice.
It's really cool.
Just, you know, a little obsessive theater boy in high school, just watching A Chorus Line every night.
It paid off.
No
it
friends.
Really. I mean, what was that like going into rehearsals, swinging for the first time, but also with the pressure and I'd imagine like a lot of expectation of what it's going to be like with Bjork?
Well, let me just tell you, I just need to state this for the record. Swings never get enough credit. They
True.
Are the hardest working people in this business, and they are the least rewarded people in this business.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It is such a hard job and so unrewarding at times. And it makes you feel like an outsider at times. But it is so fulfilling when you get to go on and do different tracks. But coming into the show, you know, my first day was so daunting because I was covering, it was either 4 or 5 tracks, which is huge for that show because you don't get to go off stage ever. Mm-hmm. So you just need to know what you're doing. And they give you, this is maybe a little chorus line secret for those of us out there that don't know, on your first day of rehearsal, they give you pretty much a printed copy of the show, like formation by formation, on a piece of paper. And you get a separate one for each of the tracks that you cover. So that's really nice. It's like a bare bones way of looking at the show and just seeing like, okay, I go from here to here, and on this line I move to here, and I move to 5, and I'm in line with the second wing, and I'm in line with the girl playing Maggie, you know. So that, you know, at first that's really daunting, but once you fill it in and once you sort of memorize it and get it into your body, it's second nature. And Bayork is so helpful with her swings. She really appreciates her swings. We would have our own separate rehearsals just with her.
Wow.
Sometimes one-on-one, and we would work on material with her alone, which was awesome. And
I wish everyone did that.
I know, right? It's really awesome to feel like accepted and like
appreciated.
Yeah, embraced. Embraced as a swing, you know, because I feel like that doesn't happen so often. And I have swung the show 1, 2, 3 times now at the professional level. And, you know, you don't always feel appreciated. So it was nice that at least she appreciated the swings. You know, not necessarily the cast appreciated us all the time, but she always let us know how much we were appreciated and how much we were helping her out and how much she needed us and loved us. So that was really
so
nice.
Sweet.
It was nice to have the support from her. So it felt like if we fell, she would definitely help us back up. And I know that she seems a little scary, but she is really the sweetest human being ever. And she is so nurturing and so nice. And, you know, I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. She really helped me. And now I feel like I can swing anything. I feel like now that I've done that, I am
now, well,
set.
Now you're like a member of the club, too. Like people know you can do it.
It kind of feels that way.
And then right after that, too, you auditioned for the New York City Center production of A Chorus Line, right?
Yes, I did. So there's
tell us a lot
that happened in between the tour and City Center. So the tour, the U.S. leg of our tour was like 4 or 5 months, and then we had a 3-month layoff in which I went to Albany, New York, and I did a production of Damn Yankees, and then we flew out to Japan and I got a promotion. I ended up playing Don in Japan, and I was still swinging while I was playing Don, so that was crazy.
What?
And there was one performance. How does that work?
Like if you
the math like, isn't mathing.
If someone is covering someone else, like is there an understudy who goes on?
Yeah, so
like,
I had 2 understudies personally, and then I covered 2 other people. So there was one show actually where my friend Charlie was playing Al at the time, and he had a really bad hip injury. We were in Japan. The show schedule is so different. You do shows at like noon and 4. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have a break in between. And on a show like A Chorus Line, it's really awful on your body. And we would be doing like 9 shows a week, sometimes upwards of 10 shows a week. So, and it was a bus and truck tour. So it was like really hard on your body. But my friend Charlie was playing Al at the time. And there was one show, I was understudying Al. And he like popped his hip out of place. Or something like that, something really crazy, and he could barely walk. And I just remember going off stage in the middle of the show, like for like a quick second in the montage, and they were like, just so you know, your Al costume is set up. If you need to run off stage and get into it, you're going to be Don and Al. And then I ran back on stage and like continued the show, like thinking about how I would do the rest of the show if I had to be both parts. Thankfully, he ended up finishing the show, but could you imagine? Like,
you'd be Dow.
Dow, that's what I kept saying. I was like, oh, well, you know, Al doesn't get his own story in the show. So I kept saying, like, now he would finally get his own story on the line.
That's insane.
But yeah, so anyway, going back to the City Center question. When I was in Japan, my brother unexpectedly passed away, and I had to leave early. And so, you know, that is like a really jarring experience when you're 6,000 miles across the world and you get that phone call and you have to leave. And so to me, you know, aside from all the emotional turmoil I was going through in regards to my family and that situation, just for my career, it felt like my time with A Chorus Line was not done because it had ended so abruptly. It ended in the middle of a show week. And I think we had like 4 shows left on the contract. So it was like right before the end.
Oh, yeah.
Right before the big celebration for everything, like job well done. And I just remember thinking to myself, like on that plane ride home, like, this isn't it for me. Like, that's not how my story with A Chorus Line ends. So they did auditions for City Center while we were in Japan, but I guess that there were a few roles that they had yet to fill. So when we came back, there was like maybe 3 weeks in between us coming back, and then they had a private call for us, the tour cast, and we got to go in. And now, again, if you've ever seen Every Little Step, it was the full team from Every Little Step that mounted the Broadway production. So it was like Bob Avian included this time, Bierkley, Peter Falesky was there, just all of these really amazing people. John Breglio, who is a part of the Michael Bennett estate, like just all of these really cool people. Binder was there. It was just so daunting because I had watched that movie so many times. And in college, when I was like depressed or felt like this career wasn't right for me, I would watch Every Little Step and I would see these people give these amazing jobs to performers. And I would see these performers just like revel in that experience and just be so excited to be working and to be working on a show like that at that level. And I just knew that, you know, I just felt deep inside that one day, hopefully, I would get to experience that. So it was so daunting to actually be standing in front of them at that moment. And I think that with all of the emotional turmoil that I was going through at the time, it sort of made that audition easier because I wasn't so focused on, normally I'm like thinking about like, oh, like, did I feed my cat this morning? Like, did I leave the iron on? Like, oh my gosh, like I really have to shower. I'm sweating so bad. Like, do they even think I look good? Like this time, you know, after you get a phone call like that, where, you know, reality sets in, you realize like what's important and what's not. So when I went into that audition, I was only focused on the work. And I was only focused on doing a good job. And I was really prepared because I had swung mostly almost every male track in the show, you know, aside from like Richie, because that would be inappropriate. but I just went into that audition and I was like, you know what? Like, whatever happens, happens. Like, there is a 1 in a million shot that I'm going to get this job. Like, everybody in New York auditioned for this. Like, the odds are stacked against me. Like, it's just really nice to be in front of these people. Like, just enjoy this experience. You've wanted it your whole life. Hopefully one day again, you'll get to do, or hopefully one day soon, you'll get to do it again. You know, not even thinking that I would book the job. And so they called a few of us back to like read, and they had people read for the roles that they played on tour, but I was a swing. So they had me read for Don, cause I had just played him in Japan. And after I had performed the Don monologue and the song, they were like, you know what? Would you mind doing the Greg stuff? Now, the Greg stuff, I hadn't performed or prepared in maybe 6 months. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. And instead of being like, can I just have a minute to go outside and do it? Like, prepare it. I literally was like, sure, 1 second. I turned around. I was wearing this, like, quarter zip sweater. I zipped it all the way up like a turtleneck, up my neck, and I turned around and I delivered the fiercest Greg that I had literally ever done, literally bearing it all. And then, you know, 2 days later, I got a call in the grocery store and I was crying over cold cuts that I was going to be in City Center's production.
Oh, I want to cry over cold cuts.
Literally
that.
So embarrassing. Everyone was like, dude, this is just ground turkey. Like, why are you crying?
Like, please relax.
Yeah, like, I am a vegetarian. Like, no, I'm not. Oh,
sir, this is a ShopRite. Please.
Right, literally. They were like, are you good?
But, like, I wonder how much of you being successful in that was just you being like, you know what? Like, what you were saying earlier about the lake, like, not a whole lot else mattered. Like, you just hone in on it.
It was, you know, obviously, like, that was an awful traumatic experience that I went through. But it really helped put things into perspective, and it really helped me in that moment give a performance that I could be proud of, and that, you know, I was like taken aback. I didn't think that I would ever get to experience that. And it was just so shocking and amazing and just a very full circle moment that I got to finish my time with the Chorus Line, for now at least, with that production.
And that's how you got your Equity card, right?
It is.
And so, I mean, I can only imagine, like, after going through what you went through with your brother passing and then having this high and this rush of getting your Equity card through your dream show is just, like, such a rewarding experience for you.
Dream show, dream job, dream team. Like, everything just fell right into place. It felt incredible. And there were a few of us that got our Equity cards doing that show. And I remember the day that we, like, you know, you sign a bunch of paperwork, excuse me, when you join Equity. And I just remember that, you know, we all signed our paperwork and went up to the Equity representative in the front of the room. And just everybody, you know, all of these Broadway stars that I had idolized and looked up to for years and just, like, literally never thought that I would be in the same room as, we're just applauding that I was joining the union with them and that I was, you know, on board with them. And it was just, you know, that was something I'll never forget. It was just such a warm, inspiring moment in my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
How, if any, like, how has the way you interpreted this material and, like, danced this choreography changed as you've grown and done multiple productions of it?
It's actually so interesting that you ask me this, because I, you know, in college I was very much a perfectionist. And, you know, I, you know, my leg needed to be a certain height every time I did it, like, XYZ move. And, you know, I had to hit X amount of turns every time I performed in a show, you know. And when it came to doing a Chorus Line, Bayrek was just like, relax, like, this is what the choreography means. And the meaning is way more important than how you look doing it. Like, if you're getting the meaning across, like, that's what matters. And honestly, that was so eye-opening to me, because I really like to approach things from an actor standpoint, but I had never been able to blend dance and acting until, it sounds so silly, but until she opened my eyes to that, I wasn't able to do it myself. And now I feel like everything I approach is from an actor standpoint, a storytelling standpoint. It's not about the choreography or how you look. It's about if you're getting the story across. To me, we're storytellers, so that is the most important thing, you know? You know, there's always going to be somebody who looks better. There's always going to be somebody who can get their leg higher, do more turns. But if you're giving the story and you have the meaning behind it and you know what you're saying through your movement, then that is what matters at the end of the day. True. And that is something you really can't be taught. That is something you have to bring out of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so, 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 so important. And it's weird how, like, I think it's safe to say for the three of us, we've learned that mostly through working.
Yes, true. Yeah.
And we've learned it. I mean, school does really wonderful things, but that when the dots connect is when you're applying it through your job.
Right.
And it reflects different muscles with different stories you tell.
And you know, when especially when I was working on the City Center production, I saw that show like I had never seen it before. And especially like in rehearsals, seeing these people I idolized like fall out of turns and just really go for it and mess up and not be ashamed of messing up. Like that to me was just something that really lit a fire under my ass and just made me realize that it's not always about perfection. It's about the story and how the audience leaves feeling changed or they were just transported away for 2 hours and they forgot about their troubles. You know, that's what's important, not the height of my leg or the number of turns.
Sure. Right.
You know?
Oh,
I mean, in A Chorus Line, one of the main ideas that they talk about is like the idea of What I Did for Love. When the characters are asked what they would do if they could never dance again, has your perspective on that idea changed since we've been forced to stay home and had our jobs taken away?
It's definitely something that has crossed my mind a few times, but right now...
Not that we're never going to dance again.
Right. But just, you know, the body clock is what it is, you know? A body clock doesn't wait for a pandemic, and you can only dance until you're a certain age. You know, your body can only take so much. And I've been dancing since I was, you know, 6 years old, so... My body is definitely going to give out soon. However, these legs are going to keep kicking until they cannot kick any longer. Like, yes. I don't care if I have 6 knee replacements. These legs are going to kick. But I have, you know, I have thought about what would happen when I can't dance anymore. And I think there are other ways to be in this career aside from dancing. And, you know, there's always, like, film and television and stuff like that, you know, acting-based stuff. But also, there's so much behind-the-scenes stuff, and you can always choreograph and direct. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to necessarily say goodbye to the business when you can no longer dance. And I think that, you know, at the time A Chorus Line came out, that wasn't necessarily the case. You know, sometimes, like... when you were a dancer back then, like, that was your career. Dancing was your career.
That was your expiration date, and then you were done.
Right. But I think since that show, the term triple threat has really, come into fashion. Everybody really strives for that now. So you can sort of branch out into other things. You know, you're not so much just a dancer anymore. You can also sing. You can also act. You can also play an instrument. You can write plays. You know, you can do so many things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that What I Did for Love, to me, was always like, what can I do if I can no longer have art or be involved in art in my life?
Mm-hmm.
And that right now, you know, I have listened to that song actually a lot since this pandemic. But don't tell anyone, okay?
Okay. Secret safe with all of us.
Right. Okay, listeners, this is an exclusive.
You heard it here first,
folks. Right. But it's just those words are so profound. And really for any profession, you know, or any passion you have in your life, those words just, you know, what would you do if you can't do what you love anymore? It's not necessarily just for dancing. It's for everything. You know, accountants who love to do accounting can like listen to that song and be moved by it, because what would you do if you can't
math,
be an accountant anymore? I mean, personally, I hate math, but you know, there are people out there who love it.
Same. I'd celebrate, but it's fine. It's fine.
Right. Maybe not the best example, but whatever. We try.
It's true.
So with our industry shutting down, when it reopens, what change do you maybe hope to see?
This is, like, definitely a loaded question. I mean, first and foremost, I would love to see some more diversity on stage, off stage, surrounding theater, surrounding the arts. But even, like, more than that, I would love to see different kinds of stories, different stories about different cultures, about different backgrounds, about different upbringings, because I feel like, you know, I feel like recently we've gotten a little bit more of those things, but nowhere near enough and nowhere near what is represented in our country. You know what I mean? I think that the arts can be a really profound experience for people, and I think that it really has the capability to change lives and to make you see things from a new perspective. But we can't do that until everybody's story is being told, until all types of stories are being told. And if America truly is the melting pot of the world, we should be performing shows that show that. So I think that's what I would like to see in theater open back up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not just diversity and inclusion in people playing roles that already exist, but in the material that the stories that are getting told, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just some different voices would be heard, and I think that's what...
bodies being seen, too.
Seen, right. Different voices, mm-hmm. different bodies, different ages would be nice, you know? Not everybody's a 25 to 35-year-old gym bod, you know?
Right. Well, also, I think about shows like Hamilton, where all of a sudden, like, these stories... I mean, Hamilton is amazing, but all of a sudden, like, these stories that we know and we accept as being important and worthy of being turned into art were being told by different voices than we were used to hearing tell those stories. But, like, why can't we hear similar voices telling their stories? Like, why do we need to hear an old white guy's story in order for it to be...
I agree.
Relevant.
Broadway.
You know, Hamilton is definitely great for what it is, but I think it's definitely a stepping stone into the future.
For sure. No, it's done so much. We need to continue moving in that direction.
Right. I agree. I agree. So I always think about the fact that you never see it's so rare, at least, that you see a Black Lori in Oklahoma or an overweight Adelaide or there's so many examples that you can pull out that are like that. And there's no reason why in 2020 we can't have those voices being heard or seen. Or, you know, to me personally, if I were ever to be casting a production, you know, who knows if that'll ever happen. But to me personally, I think that I would not care so much about how people looked on stage. I would care about the talent, and I would care about the story being told, and how, you know, sometimes casting a different voice is just, it adds so many layers, so many things that don't even need to be talked about, but are just there because that person is there. And it's eye-opening, and it's exciting, and it's intriguing, and it's just what we need now. I think it would breathe new life into theater.
Absolutely. 100%. We ask our guests every single week, what is keeping them inspired this week? And I know that there's a lot happening currently, pre-election, 34 days,
something like that, yeah. At the time of this recording, we have just watched the debate last night.
And we all have a headache.
Skip.
It's terrible. Oh, it was awful.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway.
I lost hair from it.
I lost... years
everything.
Of my life
sleep,
watching that.
Everything, yeah, right.
Brain cells, it's fine. But Wesley, what is keeping you inspired this week?
This week, and actually throughout quarantine, I've always had a passion for playwriting as well. And I decided that with this time, I was going to pursue that. So I wrote one play, and I'm in the works of writing another one. And that honestly is just so fun to me and so interesting. And I don't know if they'll ever be performed, but just the fact that, you know, I'm creating stories and just creating art myself and rather than performing in somebody else's art is just really fulfilling to me when I can't be doing it live on stage. You know what I mean? And it's also just nice to see when you're writing something, and I've done a Zoom reading or two of my own play, it's nice to see so many different interpretations of your own work.
And
what I thought in my head was nowhere even close to what was being performed, but was so much better when it was being performed because somebody else's eyes were on it. Somebody else was speaking it, you know, it was their interpretation.
Experience, what you were talking about before. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And not even an experience that I even thought would be there, but it just came up from someone else. And it's just so interesting that, you know, art is living and breathing and theater is living and breathing, you know, the live aspect is really what makes it. And so anyway, I'm going on a tangent now, but that's what's been keeping me inspired.
I love it. Fiona, what is keeping you inspired this week?
I'm going to keep mine short this week, but I have been taking sort of a big career leap that tell you more about it soon. But I've been like really digging into it the past couple weeks and actually learning about it and getting practical application and getting to do something that makes me feel lit up and like my creative energy is being used again. So that's been really inspiring. It's been amazing, cool. And to be supported by like, I've had some really, really amazing mentors in it. So that's been really, really inspiring to me.
How about you, Liv?
To be honest, I found this week and the week last week to be really uninspiring with everything that's happening in our world, especially in our country, and seeing how we are reacting to one another with such a lack of empathy and a lack of basic human decency. I mean, I'm from Jersey, and I didn't think that we could get this volatile, like, as a whole, and to see it is really disheartening. But I, this week, learned the importance of rest and the importance of taking care of myself, because I'm, as much as I love to work, I work really hard and I just work really hard. And so I don't rest and I'm really hard on myself. And so I was learning the importance of I can take a break from the world and from my thoughts and from this need to always look to do something to all the time, because that's not going to be productive if I'm burnt out. But I did see that this year, 300,000 new voters have been registered to vote this year.
Yes.
And I saw that today.
Yeah.
And
good.
I felt such a surge of joy to know that so many people care again.
So this episode is coming out on, let's see, October 5th, Monday, October 5th. So in most states, I believe, I did a little bit of research today, in most states, if you're listening to this episode on October 5th or that week, most states you still have time to register to vote in person. In some states, you still have time to register for an absentee ballot to request it. So we've offered this before, but I'm sure Liv can back me up on this. If you need help, send either of us a DM. Send us a DM on the podcast Instagram. We will help you make a voting plan.
Please vote.
If you have questions about candidates this year or where to go or any of that, you can talk to us. Like we said, we don't like being volatile or any of that. So if you do have genuine confusion and feel lost or scared because you feel pressured to vote one way and want to vote another way,
or have never voted before, or any of that. I mean, this is my full disclosure. This is my first election because I just became an American citizen.
Yay!
So I've been learning all of it. So yeah, we're not gonna judge. No pressure, but reach out.
Just make sure
you know what you're gonna do. Know your plan.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wesley, for any of our listeners who want to find out more about you, how can they follow you?
Ooh, a plug. So if anybody wants to follow me, you can follow me at www.wesleycapiello.com. That's WESLEYCAPPIELLO. The longest name ever. Or you can follow me on any social media at Wesley Capiello.
Nailed it, but you'll never forget it.
Never forget.
Never forget it.
Wesley, thank you for joining us this week. And to our listeners, thanks again for tuning in. We are wishing you a week of optimism, fulfillment, and never sticking to your backup plan. Hey, what's your backup plan, listeners? If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe, and share it with a friend. Today's episode was produced by Olivia Valley and Fiona McIntyre, with original music by Dario Valley as a part of the Broadway Podcast Network.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.